Okay, so. So I'd like to talk this afternoon a little bit more about the discourse, the Anapanasati Sutta. As I mentioned, it was given at a particular place, at a particular time, which is always mentioned in the discourse. And this is this was given in a place called the Eastern Park, which is a large park just outside Savatthi, which is modern-day North Central India. And it was a gathering that happened during the rains. The rains last for about 3 months, the monsoons in India. And early on in his teaching, the Buddha realized that the farmers were all tending their fields, and the fields are very vulnerable when during the rains. You don't want to walk on them. You have to be really careful. And so he didn't want the monks, you know, traipsing around on the fields and interfering with the farmers' crops. And so he instructed them all to come together during the rains for 3 months to retreat. And even today, we still have a tradition of 3 month retreats. But on this particular time, the Buddha said that, there was a description about how monks and nuns were gathered, and there were senior monks and nuns teaching groups of those more junior in small groups of 10, 20, 30, or 40. I can kind of think, oh, this is kind of like what's going on right here. You know, we just gather together in a group and sharing instructions and reflecting on the teaching together and practicing together. And everything was going so well, and everybody was so diligent. And the Buddha said, you know what, things are, like, you're all practicing so diligently and so focused. I'm going to stay an extra month. And so he did, and the word got out in the countryside, so more monks and nuns came to the teachings, and at the end of the fourth month, on the day of the full moon, he gave this teaching on the mindfulness of breathing. And so it was a very special occasion. So the heart of the discourse, as I mentioned earlier, are 16 verses on the practice of Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. And they're divided into four tetrads of four stanzas each. So four sections of four. I've also mentioned that only the first two verses, breathing in long, I know I'm breathing in long, breathing out long, I know I'm breathing out long, and so on, really noticing the quality of the breath, the texture of the breath, the depth of the breath. Only these two first verses focus on, primarily on, the breath itself as the primary object of meditation. And as we move through the, sorry, I'm trying to take care of my throat, so excuse me for having a cough drop in my mouth. I hope it's not distracting. As we feel the breath and we pay attention to the breath, we're mindful of the breath. So just really bringing that interest and curiosity, care to the breath, like feeling each breath as if That's the first breath. That helps us to collect the mind and helps us to become calm. And then the instruction is to feel the breath in the body. So to feel not only the breath, but to feel the whole body. Sensitive to the whole body, I breathe in. Sensitive to the whole body, I breathe out. So we're following the breath into the body, and then we're keeping our attention in the body and exploring in the body. And perhaps some of you have done practices such as body scans, in which you bring your attention into the body and you notice that there are many, many different sensations. That the body is just alive with so many sensations, and that they're changing all the time, moment by moment, micro moment by micro moment. And we come to experience the body as a kind of it's an energetic field. It's not something that's solid and static. It's something that's really alive and vibrant and dynamic and changing. And so by bringing this sense of presence and awareness in the body, it has the effect of calming the body. So we're calming the mind, calming the body. But in particular, right now, the teaching is focusing on the body. And so if we're holding, whatever we're holding in the body, we may be holding anxiety, we may be holding anger, we may be holding doubt or self-judgment. We may be holding wanting, longing, grasping. All of these are ways that the energetic field of the body kind of contracts and we find as our attention moves into the body that there are places that have more density, seem to be almost like a black hole where the energy just seems to be somehow caught. And just bringing that sensitivity, that mindfulness, that awareness, slowly, gently, gradually, these places of holding, these places of contraction, these places where we actually hold suffering in the body, release, open, and the body becomes more calm, more subtle. And so that's the process that's being talked about in this first tetrad on the body. And as I mentioned before, after the first two verses about knowing that I'm breathing and knowing the quality of the breath is no longer the primary object. So in this, as we move into the more awareness of the body, the field of the whole body, our attention is moving through the body. You know, so in some practices, the meditator is taught to move their attention very systematically through the body. So from the toes, you know, moving up like in very, very kind of tiny little almost slices, moving up through the legs and the torso and to the top of the head and then back down, sweeping awareness up and down through the body. And that can be just a really powerful practice to do that, because we really notice those places where the energy is tight, is caught. And another way to do it is just to have a holistic sense of the body and be present. And then it's like places where we're holding just kind of come into our awareness. Just like a thought might arise in the same way in the body. An awareness that there's a place of tightness or holding or pain can arise. And so we can breathe into it in that case. One of the teachers that I worked with as I was preparing this this retreat on the Anapanasati Sutta is Bhikkhu Buddhadasa, who was a great Thai forest monk in the 20th century. He was probably the greatest Thai master of that time. And he taught many of our Western teachers. And so many of the monks and nuns that we encounter in North America were students of Buddhadasa Bhikkhu. He has a wonderful way of teaching that I think is wonderful, in which he talks about that really what we're studying when we're studying the Dharma is, and when we're practicing the Dharma, is we're learning about life. And he didn't kind of make this big separation between all of nature and the Dharma. And he said, the Dharma is about nature. And he said, we are nature. We are nature. And he talked about, you know, if you've ever, if you have any familiarity with Indian culture, I often use the word duty. Like there's a sense of, you know, duty or responsibility. I think it's a very beautiful idea. And it's not one that's very kind of popular in our culture to talk about, it's my duty. I think it's, you know, it's beautiful that this is our responsibility. And he said, the development of the Dharma is our duty. So what is the development of the Dharma? And the way he put it was, to prevent that which is to prevent from arising that which is harmful to life. So if we see something is harmful to life, you know, such as violence, dishonesty, exploitation. So to prevent from arising that which is harmful to life, you know, selfishness, you know, only thinking of our own benefit, what's good for us, and not thinking of what's good for others. So that's number one. Number two is to eradicate, heal, and transform that which has already risen, which is harmful to life. So sometimes, you know, we don't see things that are arising. And first of all, of course, we're looking within ourselves. You know, so is violence, is greed, is selfishness arising within ourselves? Oh, and we recognize, oh, that's harmful to life. It's harmful to myself. It's harmful to others. So let it go. And then, but sometimes it's already arisen. So then our duty is to either heal or transform or let it go, eradicate it. And then the third duty is to bring into being that which is useful and beneficial to life. So, first of all, within ourselves, kindness, generosity, patience, compassion. Well, these are useful and beneficial to life. and to maintain and preserve beneficial elements so that they grow further. So that we, when we see, oh, that was a generous thought. That was a generous action. Oh, I was patient with that person, and I didn't get reactive and impatient, or I really, you know, I gave my time and listened to somebody who was suffering. So to acknowledge that, to see the goodness of that within ourselves, and to foster that, to take joy in it, to take pleasure in it, that these beautiful qualities are arising within us, and to foster them. And so these are called the four right efforts, and it's the way Buddhadasa put them, which was kind of unique, that this has to do with nature and life. And so he says that the tools to develop life, the tools to develop nature, are mindfulness, wisdom, clear comprehension or wisdom in action, and mental stability. Mindfulness, wisdom, clear comprehension, or wisdom in action, and mental stability or concentration. And so Anapanasati helps us to develop all of these by bringing our mindful investigation to all of reality, everything that we can experience. We bring our mindful investigation to it, and so in that way we're developing wisdom and mindfulness and mental stability. So I'd like to read the whole 16 verses. And the way I think about this is that it's a map. This is a map of practice. And in teaching on this discourse, Buddhadasa really encourages that we go through it, you know, step by step. But he also says that some people might not feel they have time to do that, or you know, have the opportunity to do that. So he said, first, really focus on if you don't have time, you don't have the opportunity, feel you don't have the opportunity in your life to go through all of these and bring them to kind of a completion, a stage of. Or fullness, high development. Really focus on the first one, the body group. So, and then focus on the fourth, the wisdom group. And Thich Nhat Hanh, who also has written extensively on the Anapanasati, has a more flexible approach, and he says, well, you might work on, you know, one for a while and then another for a while, and you know, you might find yourself in just in different places on this terrain. And so having a map, you know, it kind of helps us to understand where we are. So it's repetitious in the way that it's formulated, because it comes from the oral tradition. So I'll just read it through. The meditator, having gone to the wilderness, to the shade of a tree, or to an empty building, sits down with legs folded crosswise, body held erect, and setting mindfulness to the fore. Always mindful, one breathes in. Mindful, one breathes out. While breathing in long, one knows, I am breathing in long. Or breathing out long, one knows, I am breathing out long. While breathing in short, one knows, I'm breathing in short, or breathing out short, one knows I am breathing out short. One trains oneself, sensitive to the whole body I breathe in. One trains oneself, sensitive to the whole body I breathe out. One trains oneself, calming the whole body I breathed in, I breathe in. One trains oneself, calming the whole body I breathe out. Next is the second tetrad, the feelings group. One trains oneself, sensitive to rapture, I breathe in. One trains oneself, sensitive to rapture, I breathe out. One trains oneself, sensitive to happiness, I breathe in. One trains oneself, sensitive to happiness, I breathe out. One trains oneself, sensitive to mental processes, I breathe in. One trains oneself, sensitive to mental processes, I breathe out. One trains oneself, calming mental processes, I breathe in. One trains oneself, calming mental processes, I breathe out. The third tetrad is the mind group. One trains oneself, sensitive to the mind, I breathe in. One trains oneself, sensitive to the mind, I breathe out. One trains oneself, gladdening the mind, I breathe in. One trains oneself, gladdening the mind, I breathe out. One trains oneself, steadying the mind, I breathe in. One trains oneself, steadying the mind, I breathe out. One trains oneself, liberating the mind, I breathe in. One trains oneself, liberating the mind, I breathe out. One trains oneself, focusing on impermanence, I breathe. Oh, sorry. So this next section is the wisdom group. And so this is the group that Buddhadasa said, you know, if you're going to focus on, if you're not going to kind of move through it, just really focus on this group, and then with every experience, body and mind, bring this training to bear. So this is the wisdom group. One trains oneself focusing on impermanence, I breathe in. One trains oneself focusing on impermanence, I breathe out. One trains oneself focusing on fading away, I breathe in. One trains oneself focusing on fading away, I breathe out. One trains oneself focusing on cessation, I breathe in. One trains oneself focusing on cessation, I breathe out. And one trains oneself focusing on relinquishment, I breathe in. One trains oneself focusing on relinquishment, I breathe out. This is how mindfulness of in and out breathing is developed and pursued, so as to be of great fruit, of great benefit. So each of these words that are used in this discourse have a specific meaning in terms of the development of the mind. I'm going to talk about them a bit more over the course of the next few days that we're together. So I'm going to just take a few more minutes to talk about the feelings in general, the second tetrad, the feelings group. So when the Buddha talks about feelings, the Buddha gives a lot of importance to being mindful of feelings. And when he's talking about feelings, when we use the word feelings, the Pali word is vedana. And it has a particular meaning, a more technical meaning than when we say, how are you feeling today? I'm feeling fine, I'm feeling good. Feelings in the kind of the technology of awakening, Buddhist awakening, is that we find certain things pleasant, we find certain sensory experiences pleasant, we find certain sensory experiences unpleasant, and we find other sensory experiences kind of neutral. They're not particularly pleasant or unpleasant. So, you know, you could take an example of the lunch, you know, anything in the lunch, you know. So maybe you found the lentil stew to be really pleasant. Maybe you tasted it and you really found it pleasant. And maybe lentils gives you gas, and you know, and you saw lentils and kind of had an unpleasant reaction to, oh, lentils. No, I can't digest these very well. So feelings are not intrinsic to the object itself. Lentil stew is just the lentil stew. And dependent on your conditioning, you might find it pleasant or unpleasant or kind of neutral. You know, it's okay. You know, I can eat it. So in every sensory experience that we have is accompanied by pleasant and unpleasant and neutral feelings, vedna, feeling tone. We can say, use the word feeling tone, which makes it a little bit more distinct. And so what happens is that, you know, the feelings come and they're not in our control. You know, we don't control what we find pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. It's just how we experience it. But then what happens is that when something's pleasant, we tend to, you know, kind of grasp it, like, chocolate quinoa cake. So, yum. And so, you know, so we want it. We want it. And so there's grasping. There's nothing wrong with liking food. It's the kind of that driven quality, you know, when we want something, we want more, we want it again, and it can take us over, the kind of the drivenness around wanting or not wanting when we find something unpleasant. So we can't avoid everything that we find unpleasant. Life dishes out lots of unpleasant experiences. Illness, aging, loss, separation from those we love, needing to do all kinds of things that we don't enjoy doing. So there's lots of unpleasant experiences that we can't avoid. And we can't even necessarily avoid finding them unpleasant, but we can avoid the struggle that comes with resisting and trying to push away and trying to get rid of the experience. And neutral experiences, you know, we tend to just ignore. And there's a lot of neutral experiences which, when we become mindful of them, can actually be rather enjoyable. You know, the simple, very simple things, like just looking at a tree or feeling the breeze on your skin. And then there are also spiritual, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experiences. And so these experiences that are named in these next two verses about sensitive to rapture, I breathe in, and sensitive to happiness, I breathe in, and so on. These come from the kind of the working through of these the first group of body experiences. So as the mind becomes, as we begin to be more mindful of the whole body, sensitive to the whole body, and calming the body through mindfulness of breathing. There is a kind of an energy that arises. It's this feeling of aliveness, and it's called piti or rapture. It's translated as rapture, and it's a kind of almost an aroused feeling. You feel very alive. You feel kind of energized, and it can even, if it gets very strong, it can even be a little bit unpleasant. But it can also be very energizing. And then, you know, as we're present with that, it kind of mellows out into happiness, into just a kind of a serenity, a contentment that is more smooth and just lovely. And the rest of that verse is, you know, so sensitive to mental processes, and so all of these feeling experiences, feeling, the arising of wanting, the arising of not wanting, so we're in breathing in and breathing out, in the working with this whole feeling group, we're simply knowing, you know, anchored in the breath, tethered to the present moment by this very light connection with the breath. Buddhadasa talks about it being feather light. It's a very, very kind of, it's in the background, like, you know, when I was thinking about it, I had this memory of a poem by Rumi. Okay. Might have written it. Sometimes you hear a voice through the door calling you, as fish out of water hear the waves, or a hunting falcon hears the drums, come back. This turning to what you deeply love saves you. So that, just that kind of distant drumbeat that the falcon just is always hearing as it's going out and soaring and hunting, and then the falconer's drumbeat is summoning the falcon back. And so we have that kind of drumbeat of the breath, that rhythmic quality of the breath, just bringing us back again and again to this moment. And the mind wanders off, and then, oh yes, the breath, I feel the breath, come back. And as I come back and feel the breath, let me tune in to what is being felt, what feelings are present in this moment. Is there something unpleasant that I'm feeling angry about or feeling unhappy about in some way? Is there something I'm wanting? Is there a feeling of peace and contentment? Sukha, the happiness. So, sensitive to mental processes, I breathe in, and then calming mental processes, I breathe out. And so the calming has to do with just giving that space of awareness, that space of mindfulness, to be known, to be felt. It's not that we need to say, so there's anger here, and I need to calm this anger. Like, okay, you know, this is bad, anger's bad, I shouldn't be angry. I'm not being a good Buddhist if I'm angry. You know, it's simply giving that space of awareness, that mindfulness, connecting to the breath, knowing the anger in the body, knowing the angry thoughts that are coming, hearing the angry speech in your mind, calming, just letting it be, and it calms itself. And so I'm in that description about how we work with feelings. As Buddhadasa said, I am jumping ahead to the wisdom group of teachings. So focusing on impermanence, I breathe in. So I'm just seeing how when, as I'm present with anger in the moment, breathing in, breathing out, knowing the feelings, knowing the mental processes, it arises, it fades away. And I don't need to do anything. It follows its own nature. And it's the nature of everything to arise and to pass away. So this continuity of mindfulness of breathing, you know, like we bring our lives with us in retreat. Like all of us have lives which are full of so much, you know, there are issues that we're working with, relationships, difficult relationships, so things that we may think about as problems, challenges. So we're on retreat, but they're here with us, right? You know, it's and so they're going to come into our minds. You know, it may you know, this is a short retreat, so it's not like the mind can get so quiet that we're just really. It's probably unusual if that's your experience, then that's wonderful. For most people, I think it would be, we're still thinking about things in our lives, or thinking about ourselves, or things that we feel that we need to work with in ourselves. And so just with this mindfulness of breathing, as thoughts come up, as feelings come up, just be aware of them and stay connected to the breath and give them space to be felt. You don't need to fix them. You don't need to find a solution or make them go away. Just take this time on retreat to allow them to be felt and to experience the space that we have around all of our thoughts and feelings. And we always have this home to come back to, the home in the breath, the home in the body. So let's just sit for a few breaths. Thank you.